Pitch Talks, brought to you by North Star Bets. That's a win.
Come on in, sit down, and join us. It is time once again for Pitch Talks World Series Edition. Now I am one half of your hosting crew, Andrew Zuber, your boy the Zubes here from the Parlay. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, my co-pilot, the smart one of the group, Nick Ashburn from North Star Bets. We are thrilled to have you here with us. It is time, Nick. We've made it. The October is coming to an end. We've reached the Fall Classic. We've reached the World Series. How excited are you?
It's good. It's good to have one thing to focus on. You know, during the regular season, you got 15 teams going at once. During the playoffs, sometimes it's hard. You got multiple day games going during a single day. You can laser in, focus on one game. And we've got a heck of a matchup here. I know that some people wanted to see, I don't know, the heavyweights, the Yankees, Dodgers, something like that. This is a little bit different. You got the clear, lovable underdog, and then you've got the guys who are really, really good and seem to be here all the time. That David versus Goliath. It's a cliche, but it's fun to watch. And baseball, honestly, might be the best sport for it. Like, if you had this equivalent matchup in the NBA, the team that's the Philadelphia Phillies, that matchup would get absolutely smashed. But in baseball, they've got a fighting chance, and I think it'll be a lot of fun to watch.
It is two sides to the coin. There is the cold, calculated approach of the Houston Astros against the, as you said, the underdog, the fun-loving, the home runs, and worry about the rest of it later, of the Philadelphia Phillies. Before we get into our World Series matchup, a quick goodbye to the two teams that are not joining us after the AL and NLC. A pretty brisk, I will say. I've had a couple days off here. They've been off since Monday. A pretty brisk ALCS and NLCS. We start the team that we were fading, I want to say, since July. The New York Yankees are not, once again, going to make the World Series. A bit of a, I don't want to say hilarious. A hilarious exit, Nick?
Yeah, is that fair to say? Go for it.
I will say it then. A hilarious exit to the New York Yankees. Some boo birds, some words out on Thursday that the players were shocked by how mean the fan, welcome to New York, how mean the fans were after being dispatched by Houston. We said it all along, we were not going to bet on the New York Yankees, and here we are now, laughing and stroking our beards. Nick, some words on the newly departed 2022 New York Yankees.
I mean, this feels potentially, and we'll get to this a little later in the show, it could be an end of an era for the Yankees. You know, Aaron Judge has been so good this season and so attached to this little run of, let's call it, regular season success the Yankees have had in recent years. And there was just so much in the series to like. As someone observing from the outside who dislikes the Yankees, which I think people born in, you know, much of North America are just inclined to feel that way. You know, you had the ticket prices dropping down to, I don't know, what it ended up at, you know, $28 for game four. You had the players complaining that Aaron Judge hit the ball really hard, but it wasn't a home run. Which was just ludicrous. I mean, that happens in baseball. First of all, everyone's playing in the same ballpark. So the Yankees are, you know, this happens with the Yankees all the time. They benefit from weird things happening in their ballpark all of the time. But it, to me, just the idea of, oh, he hit a ball really hard and it deserves to be a home run and they opened the roof and that ruined everything. It's like, these are the conditions everyone is playing in. They're the same conditions. And guys, yeah, they blast the ball sometimes. It doesn't go for a home run. Guys, also, the bases are loaded and they hit a dumb blooper and everyone comes in. Like, this is the nature of the game. And for the Yankees to kind of multiple guys and Aaron Boone, and we'll see if Aaron Boone's still around in the future, but for them to come out and actively complain about that, it just made them seem like losers. I don't know if that's reductive to use that terminology, but that's how it felt. And from the perspective of someone who's always disliked the Yankees since approximately birth, that was fun to watch.
Yeah, I think it rocks. Adding in the potential that Aaron Judge is not going to be on this team in the future. We'll get into that, as you said, a little bit later on in our mailbag segment. We'll be taking your Twitter questions later on in the show after we preview the World Series. And then we'll talk about our picks for MVP and how the series will go. But a lot to like if you don't like the Yankees, in terms of as much as you can enjoy they're one of the few teams. I think the Yankees, Houston, the Dodgers are in this, where, like, I think 27, 25, 26 teams would be pretty happy with an ALCS berth. You would say, like, oh, we're one step away, it feels pretty good. The Yankees, of course, it's World Series or bust. So we get to call them busts. It's just that those are the rules that they made. Those are the rules that we're playing by. Yeah, the Aaron Boone stuff, probably updating the LinkedIn, probably updating the Indeed.com, I would say, is the move there. Some questionable stuff, but I mean, standard playoff questionable stuff. The Nestor Cortez leaving in to give up a home run when he did not look right down the stretch there. A bunch of small things, but it seemed like we given the post-game comments and given sort of the many question marks that came up, maybe the end of the Aaron Boone era, maybe the end of the Aaron Judge era. Tons of things to enjoy if you are a Yankee hater. And if you are a Yankee hater, you're probably one of many. As you said, if you watch baseball and you don't live in New York, you probably hate the Yankees. It's sort of that, not to be reductive, but it is sort of that simple for me. The other side of it, a team a little less fun, of course, to watch lose, a team that is easy to cheer for, a team with a lot of guys that are fun to watch and fun to cheer for. The San Diego Padres will not be making the World Series. They should be back with this core. Juan Soto, of course, in the mix. They did it without Fernando Tatis Jr., but there are some questions about who will be around, who will not be around, particularly in the pitching staff. What did you make of the exit and maybe the season as a whole of the San Diego Padres?
I thought the Padres were really impressive. I mean, you mentioned Tatis Jr. He is only one player, but he plays a critical position. And offensively, he's one of the best players in the league when he's on. It's been a while since we've seen him do that, so it's easy for that to fade out of our memories. But he is one of the league's premier stars. They did it without him. They had that aggressive trade deadline, and they got Juan Soto. They were a lot of fun. Like you said, this group is generally speaking around. After 2023, things get a little dicier. A lot of that pitching comes up, like Darvish, Snell, and Hader. Their contracts will all be up at the end of that year. It's tough with them. Like you said, you want to think they will be back, and that's probably true. But they work in this division with the Dodgers, and that is such a dragon for them to slay. It is so unlikely for them to win the division in any given year. And it's not like the Dodgers are totally invulnerable. We saw what the Giants were able to do to them a couple years ago. But it makes their lives so much harder, and they fight upstream, and they fight upstream, you know, fairly valiantly, it seems. And I thought it was great they were able to beat the Dodgers in the playoffs. This is the opposite of the Yankees. It's a team that a lot of people can get behind, can cheer for, even if you're not necessarily from San Diego, because they are that team that's not a huge market, but they're willing to put the resources in. They're willing to be extremely aggressive. I think there are a lot of people who watch their team, whatever that team may be, and they wish they acted more like the San Diego Padres.
Yeah, one of those teams that sort of eliminates the excuses if you're cheering for any sort of size of market team. So, well, if you really wanted to, your owner could probably afford to pay Juan Soto if they really wanted. Your owner could go out and sign Eric Hosmer to a probably a overpaid contract. You can go out and acquire Blake Snell. You can go out and get Yu Darvish. If you really wanted to do it, your owner could do it. The Padres can do it. Anybody can do it. Of course, they have to want to come. But just sort of the point being made that you made, that sort of the inspiration for no matter what size of the market, having to want to do it is sort of the first step. They do remind me a little bit of the middle of last decade's Cubs, where it was like that they didn't win it in 2015, and there was sort of a feeling like, okay, but this core is going to be around for a long time. They do get it done the next year, and then the next thing you know, 2-3 years later, they're selling down the road, and it's one title, and it's a success, obviously breaking the curse. But these windows close quickly, and as you mentioned, never going to be easy in the NL West with the Dodgers. The Giants expected to be major players in the free agent market. You can never count them out. It's not going to be easy to get back to the NLCS, regardless of how much of that is success. It may have felt as the Padres did make it there. That being said, that is enough goodbyes. We talked a little bit last week about what it means for those teams and what there is to learn from them. Let's focus on the teams that did make it. Nick, you have a great point here. I want to toss to you that this playoff matchup, this World Series matchup, mind you, reminds you of a recent history World Series matchup.
Yeah, you don't have to go too far in the past. I mean, it helps the Houston Astros are always kicking around here, so the comparisons are easy to make. But it really feels like the 2019 World Series, where you had the Washington Nationals against the Houston Astros. And the Nationals, you know, that team really struggled out of the gate, but was quite talented. And maybe they're not quite the same degree of underdog as these Phillies are. But it was the same build. It was like, we've got Scherzer and Strasburg. We've got the dual ace. And that's exactly what the Phillies have with Nolan and Wheeler. We've got the one kind of transformative position player. That was Juan Soto, ironically, kind of the quasi-replacement to Bryce Harper, who is now the Phillies guy. And now, you know, the Phillies have a fairly deep lineup, but there are some guys they're counting on who are more role player type dudes. And that's what happened with the Nationals. Like, they got, you know, Howie Kendrick had that famous home run. Like, they had Rendon, who was fantastic, and they had supporting Soto, but really it wasn't some murderer's row. And they had a bullpen where they didn't trust anybody. And they had like a couple of guys that pitched any of the innings, but realistically they made that bullpen very small because they knew most of it wasn't that good. And the Phillies had a 4.27 bullpen ERA this year, which made people wonder how they could be effective in the playoffs. They've answered some of those questions, obviously, but it's the same vibe. It's like, this team is likable. This team coming out of the NL, they're likable. They didn't win nearly as many games as the Astros. You could go on paper and find advantage, disadvantage at each position. Normally you'd say, you know what, Houston's a little bit better here. But in this case, you know, it could be a similar situation where you get the unlikely hero, you get that big home run. That's what Philly does a lot of. And, you know, we could have an upset.
I have to continue on with my crusade from last week about the National League not being real. It all lines up. It all lines up. The 2019, the Nationals, maybe, as you said, maybe being the underdogs on paper, maybe being a less talented team, that not mattering at all when it comes down to a short series. I will continue to beat that drum and say, as I have the last couple of weeks, that to me points to the Phillies somehow, some way getting this done. I do love that comp, especially, you can't ignore the Bryce Harper of it all. It is sort of perfectly put. You know, Washington famously winning the World Series the first year after he leaves, and the up and down, not love hate, but the sort of lack of traction out of the gate with Philly, you know, all the big moves, adding Real Muto and adding Castellanos, and then this season adding, Kyle Schwarber. It was sort of this, you know, we famously at the press conference that they planned on winning, and now here they are. Finally, they sort of broken through, and it all has started to click. I do love that little redemption arc, a little mini redemption arc for Bryce Harper, getting his chance to slay that demon in the Houston Astros. That if you are looking for a team to boo and you are out on the Yankees, the Astros will gladly fit that role, sort of the happy villains as we go into it. I think that would be a fun outcome. And I think we're in for a good series. I think we're in for a fun series. I think the styles match up nicely. We'll get into series predictions here in a minute. But first, you know, the World Series and short baseball series in general do lend themselves to unlikely heroes a lot of the time. David Eckstein being your World Series MVP, maybe the best possible example of this. There's usually an unlikely hero that steps up. Sometimes there's a very likely hero that steps up. That happens too. Nick, if I were to ask you to pick a likely hero and an unlikely hero, who would you come up with? Let's start with our likely heroes.
I'm going to go with a guy who's basically played this role before, and that's Kyle Schwarber. You know, it's easy to forget that Kyle Schwarber was very central to that 2016 Cubs team. In fact, he was coming back from injury. People didn't know if he was going to make it. How good was he going to be at the time? And also, at that moment, you didn't have the universal DH, so you're wondering, could he make an impact when they were at home? There was a lot of complications for Schwarber, and he came back, and it looked like he hadn't missed a beat, and he was that huge left-handed bat in that lineup. And was a big part of their World Series victory. You know, he's been around. He's been part of those Cubs runs that after that, which weren't particularly successful. He was pretty good with Boston last year in the playoffs. He's established himself as this weird, like, he's a leadoff guy. And he also led the NL in home runs. I know that's not as outrageous as it would have been, I don't know, 20 years ago or something like that. But he is so good at drawing his walks, getting on base, setting the table. Like, if he's not giving you that leadoff home run, he's getting on base for you, and that's going to help, you know, Bryce Harper, who we are going to keep talking about in the show, I'm sure, because he's such a central figure in the series. But you get on base for Real Muto and for Harper and pass that baton, and good things can happen for these Phillies lineup. So I think that not only does he have the possibility of giving you that knockout punch, that huge 2-3 run home run in a crucial spot, he's also that guy who maybe more quietly is getting on base to set that up for somebody else.
A beautiful pick. And you know me, Kyle Schwarber is the archetype of type of guy that there's two types of guy I'm always going to fall for. The hefty lefty that slugs is number one on my list. And always the underrated catcher is my second love. But the Kyle Schwarbers of the world will always have a spot in my heart. Ball players over athletes all day long. As for my likely hero, listen, you asked likely hero, likely. It's Bryce Harper. Let's not overthink this. He's been the best hitter in the playoffs so far. He is having already an incredibly great postseason run. You know, the story is well told. The Sports Illustrated cover at 17, being called the LeBron James of baseball. And this playoff run, we've seen the dramatic moments. We saw the go-ahead home run in the eighth inning to clinch the NLCS, the wow, I just did that moment. This has always been sort of his calling card, is that this is the stuff that he is built for, that he's a special player that rises to the occasion in special moments. He has done it on this run. I love the symbolism of 2019. I love him sort of navigating that road from, you know, cocky youngster that almost people almost enjoyed cheering against a little bit, where it was like the clown question and the he's so cocky, he hasn't earned it, to having the MVP season, to going to the Phillies and it sort of not clicking right away, to now realizing it all and being beloved and being part of this really fun Phillies team and being central and being the guy in the middle of it all and having all the big moments and being easy to cheer for. I love it. I hope it continues. I would love to see Bryce Harper as your World Series MVP. I think that's something that I would get a lot of satisfaction out of. I'm somebody that loves to cheer for excellence. I cheer for the LeBron James of the world. I want to have the moments where the greatest players make the greatest plays and realize that potential. We spend so much time talking about, you know, Mike Trout is going to be this guy or Ohtani, the Angels in general. Like, they have these great players and they never get to go on the biggest spots. I don't want that to happen to Bryce Harper. I want him to have the World Series moment, and to have it against the Astros would be just about perfect. Sort of that flipping of the script. He's now the good guy and the Astros are the easy heels. I think it's beautiful. I think it's poetic. I think it is baseball incarnate. I am giving Bryce Harper the very obvious likely hero outcome. Let's flip it. Who's your David Eckstein? Who's your Steve Pierce? Who's your guy that maybe you don't know the name quite yet? We could be here a week from now saying, wow, I can't believe X player is the World Series MVP.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot of plucky underdogs on the Astros per se. But I am going to give you one. You know, I think the show might end up being a little Philly-centric, and that might play into kind of our biases and what we want to see. But I think Chaz McCormick is a guy who, and it's not like he had a bad season. He's more of just a regular kind of everyday starting center fielder who hits in the bottom of the lineup. It's an archetype we've seen before. His outs above average percentile, I think, was 93 this season. But what really drew me to him, like, he's a slightly above average hitter this year as well. But what drew me to him was I was looking into the numbers, and he, of any kind of regular hitter in the series, on pitches 96 or more was the most effective. So he's a guy who hits that top end velocity really, really well. That makes it easy for me to envision a scenario that late in a game, when you absolutely have to have that hit, he's the guy who's, I don't know, slapping a single the other way or even lacing a double. He's not a huge power guy, but when the going gets tough, he's someone who can stay in with those really, really good high leverage relievers and make something happen. And for that reason, he's my unlikely hero, as much as, like I said before, I'd rather it be someone on the Phillies.
A great pick. You talk about, you know, there's these rosters, you go up and down and the names jump out. I don't think Chaz McCormick jumps out to just about anybody other than maybe you. And I love the velocity. I think that's a great point. And it does make a lot of sense with how modern bullpens are used, and that defensive ability cannot be underrated, especially in such a series as this, where so many weird things are likely to happen. My unlikely hero, maybe this is cheap, and you can tell me if it's not actually unlikely. Does Jeremy Peña count as unlikely? It's one of those ones where it's like, to the hardcore baseball fan, I think people know who Jeremy Peña is. To the casual watcher who didn't watch a ton of Astros games, who was just tuning in to the World Series, I don't know that Jeremy Peña, when you look at the rosters, is going to jump out the way Bregman or Alvarez or Harper or even Schwarber, Castellanos, Real Muto. I don't know that Jeremy Peña's name jumps out the same way.
You're walking the line. Like, he's not a household name for, I think that's probably a fair statement to say. He has been very important these playoffs. He's a very good player, but I'll give it to you, because he's not going to be at the, you know, he hasn't been core part of these Astros that everybody knows and has seen. And, you know, he's just a little tier below the superstars.
You're being very generous, and I appreciate that about you, Nick, because I don't have a backup. Listen, he's been great in the postseason. He leads the team in OPS. He leads the team in doubles and home runs. And sort of my key here to calling him unlikely is, if you started the beginning of this season and you looked at the Houston Astros, you said they're going to be good, but they lost Correa, probably going to have a step back there. He has filled that role and then some. Somebody that, you know, his ascent, his ability to step right into this lineup and act like he's been a part of those runs, even though he hasn't, act like he fits right in, provide that boost, such an important position as well. I think that is really, really valuable and is part of, you know, we talk about sustainable winners. Players like Jeremy Peña are the reason that Houston is back here. As much as it is the Verlanders, as much as it's the Alvarez, as much as it's the Bregmans, the Altuves, Jeremy Peña is sort of the calling card of what this team does so well, him and maybe Kyle Tucker. Sort of those guys that, you know, beginning of the year, you're like, who are these guys? At the end of the year, you're like, oh, he's going to win an award. He might be the most important player in the World Series. So there's four great picks: McCormick, Peña, Harper, and Schwarber. We each did one of each. Good for us. Because I think, as you said, it's easy to be Philly-centric. They're a lot more fun. It's a lot less fun to say, you know, we're backing Houston because Houston's always here and Houston's going to win and nobody can beat Houston. That being said, let's pause a second before we get into the series predictions and take a look at the mailbag. We opened up things on Twitter and asked for some questions. We got some great ones. We're going to start with one from a gentleman named Sean. He wants to know, which team will Aaron Judge play for next? Lots of options out there.
I mean, it's so boring to say the Yankees, so I won't. I'll say the San Francisco Giants. This is a team that has cleared some money off the books. They have a history of being willing to spend. I think they also know that with just how good the Dodgers are and how good the core of the Padres are and how aggressive that team is, they don't quite have the horses right now. Like, they were pretty clearly behind these two teams. I know they did have that really nice run in 2021, but in terms of raw talent, especially Carlos Rodon probably leaving the squad, they need some star power. And he's someone who is from California. He's someone who, I don't know, maybe is a little bit sick and tired of all the hoopla that goes around with. And again, maybe this is wish casting, but hypothetically, he could be sick of all the stuff that goes on with the Yankees and that team's inability to kind of hit the next level. I could see him moving on. You know, I know if I'm making odds on this, I think the Yankees have to be the favorite, but the Giants are an intriguing option that would make the NL West that division of death once again. And I think it would be really interesting to see.
I love the visual. He would look great in the Giants uniform. The home runs, going from home runs in the Yankee Stadium to home runs out into the ocean on the opposite field home runs, I think would be awesome. I think he fits right in. I think to your point, the Giants have shown an organizational willingness to spend. They've shown an ability to not be scared off by the Dodgers, as you said last year, sort of that run out of nowhere. I think Aaron Judge does fit right in. You can't ignore the California connection. As much as I want to also pick San Francisco, I won't do that because I let you went first and you did it, quite frankly. What about the Mets? Well, let's want to do comedy for comedy's sake.
That's the storyline.
Let's do the Mets. They have shown the willingness. You talk about willingness to spend. There is no price tag too high. If you have to ask how much it costs, you cannot afford it. That sort of situation with the New York Mets. I think it would be so funny for him to be like, I'm sick of playing in New York, .. For the Yankees, I'll play for the Mets. I think that would be a lot of fun. It would be that rivalry, that little quiet rivalry cranked up. I think the papers would go nuts with it. I think you'd have a ready-made villain in a way that you wouldn't if you went across the country and sort of was out of sight, out of mind in the NL West if he was in the NL East. Obviously, they wouldn't play a ton, but he's getting coverage. He's on your local TV. He's always around. I would love it. I think it would be hilarious. I think we are both averting our eyes and putting our hands in our pockets and whistling at the idea that he's probably very likely a favorite to go back to New York. Again, we were doing odds, I'd have it at like -250. He's a Yankee next year. I'm not, if that actually is available at North Star Bets, I did not make the line. I guess it's not -250, but yeah, the Yankees do feel like the right one. I'm going to vote for hilarity and I'm going to say the New York Mets. Nick, what do we got next in the mailbag?
Yeah. Oh, I do want to say on that, like, Steve Cohen just seems like a troll at heart. So and that good. Would be such a troll move to be like, this is New York is my city now. we're going to swerve away from baseball for a second. This is a Piri Piri Pie. I believe we have answered one of the questions from this user before, but we're happy to double dip. And I think this fits into our wheelhouse. The question is, what three treats do you most like to receive on Halloween? Zoobs, I interpreted this as a younger version of ourselves potentially trick-or-treating as opposed to something that would happen now, but maybe in your life you're receiving Halloween treats as an adult. Far be it from me to judge. I will just toss it to you open and see where you go with it.
Halloween treating it turns into buying a box in November for yourself. I will say I have a six-month-old child. I am now about to re-enter the trick-or-treating sphere. I'm about to go back out in on the December 31st and stand at the end of the driveway while my kid knocks on doors. I'm back in the Halloween game. I'm a very simple man. I like, and listen, it's one of those things, right? I can say I have the obvious picks, but everyone's tastes are different. I'm a guy who likes the combination of peanut butter and chocolate. So my top three is a mini Snickers, a mini O. Henry, and a single Reese's peanut butter cup. That's the Holy Trinity to me. Those are the three. If I am dumping the bag out and separating all my candy, those three are going into the S tier. It's ranked sort of, to me, it's ranked very top is those three, and the very bottom is the regular bag of chips that has been stepped on. And
horrendous. There's so many good types of chips in the world. It absolutely blows my mind that anyone eats original chips. I can't believe it. I live with someone who does, and they'll potentially listen to this and be enraged by this comment, but potato chips that are just plain regular are for psychos. Speaking of psychos, people have said to me that my chocolate bar preferences are absolutely insane. Actually, very few of my things I'm going to pick here are chocolate bars, because I feel like when you go on Halloween, you get that chocolate bar fatigue, even really good ones. The ones you've mentioned are good, undoubtedly. Like, there are some good chocolate bars out there, but I always liked to get a little bit of a change of pace. Like, I like to get the mini Twizzlers. I wouldn't even really go for Twizzlers day in, day out, but in the sea of chocolate, the oasis of Twizzlers was always nice. Smarties, similar reason, just like a different vibe from the chocolate bars, but a lot of the same elements. And then I'll do one last chocolate bar, because this is one that you see at Halloween from time to time. It's a bit controversial. It is the Hershey's Cookies and Cream. Again, just a slightly different feel. I like the texture. I don't know if you'd even characterize that as white chocolate. I always liked white chocolate. I could see someone seeing all three of those and saying that they're garbage. It is very subjective, but those are the first three things that jump to mind.
The mini blocks of Smarties, are you a pour it into your hand and eat them one at a time, or are you shot glass style?
Again, we change as we get older, right? I think as a child, it probably would have just been a shot, but as you get older, you come to appreciate things a little bit more. The value of a single Smartie still holds true. So nowadays it would be into the hand. Much like M&Ms, they're not going to melt in there unless it's an extreme circumstance. You have the luxury of taking it slow. Why not enjoy it to the max?
Feeling more washed up the more questions we answer.
That's where people are going with it.
This one comes from Jeff Lawton. That's a ballpark question of purely aesthetics. You're watching games. I don't know if you've been to either one of these parks. What's the better ballpark, Minute Maid or Citizens Bank?
I have been to Citizens Bank. I have not been to Minute Maid. I thought that Citizens Bank Park was actually quite underrated. Like, I don't know if it has a individual standout element. It's just very solid across the board. It kind of gives you the things you want in a ballpark, great concourse. Everything is outside. It's nice. It's a good ballpark. I don't know if it's like you were talking about S tiers before. I don't think it fits into that S tier. But I will put it above Minute Maid, because Minute Maid can be a bit dark at times. We've talked about the dimensions of it being a little bit odd. The train thing they've got going, it feels like a missed opportunity. There should be more happening with the train. So I'm going to go with Citizens Bank, but I don't think this is a World Series that's going to feature amazing ballparks that we're going to love looking at for sort of 3-4 hours at a time.
Yeah, to continue sort of the theme of being washed up, I remember 22 years ago when Minute Maid Park opened, and it was sort of this like oddity. Obviously, it had the hill and the pole in the middle, but the train, the Crawford boxes, I remember it being like you tuned in to see the park at the start. It was such a neat place, and you were waiting for the video games to come out for the park to be there. I always thought it was sort of an interesting aesthetic place and a weird space where weird things happen. The Albert Pujols home run that like smashed onto the train tracks, really cool. I do like the little kitschy elements of it. I've also been to Citizens Bank, and I am with you. It is an underrated little park. Little is a stupid thing to say, call it, but it's an underrated baseball stadium. Even nice skyline in the background. I love it. You mentioned it, and I thought I would be the clever one to mention it. I love that concourse in center field, Ashburn Alley. When I think of ballparks that I've been to, that's the one thing that I would love to see replicated. I think Pittsburgh does a pretty good job of it as well, is that if you're not going to have bleachers back there, having a cool place to just walk around, rides and concessions and elevated bullpens, you can just sort of be walking around and boom, there's the bullpen. I really did enjoy the experience of being in Citizens Bank Park. I can't rate that for Minute Maid. But I will say, in terms of sort of a standard baseball park, Citizens Bank is one that I think if that was where your home team played, you'd be happy to go there on any occasion. So I'm going to give it up for the bank. Nick, what do we have to close us out in the middle?
We're going into uncharted waters here. This question is from Los Bomberos Appreciator, which is Ted Cruz dumb enough to show up for a game in a stadium filled with Philadelphia sports fans? This is a great question, because I did think that the Yankees fans' treatment of Ted Cruz was particularly satisfying to me. I don't know if we have to dive super deep into what Ted Cruz is about. I think if you know, you know. But the idea of kind of the most infamously vicious and mean-spirited fans in sports getting a crack at Mr. Cruz is something that I'm interested in seeing. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I hope he shows up. I'd love to see the shaky cell phone footage of it. Because listen, it's also not easy to go to Yankee Stadium and survive that barrage. But I think you need like a helmet if you're going to go to Philly. I expect him to not go, but I would appreciate footage if you are there, were he to show up. I'd love to hear
if we have listeners in Philly and you see Ted Cruz there, please get the cameras out. Want to see what's going on.
Last week it was arson. This week it's the physical, not the physical. It's a verbal.
We're not encouraging anyone to do anything. We just want to see what happens. Which
yeah,
I think
we're
is
interested
fair.
In the footage.
Intellectual curiosity.
Oh boy! Speaking of curiosity, Nick, it is time to talk about the World Series itself. You are on there, North Star Bets, giving your insights, giving your prognostications, giving some great lines. You've obviously studied this probably up and down, left and right over the last couple of days. How are you feeling before I get into my pure vibes, looking at it and sort of studying it? What's your instinct about what's about to happen here over the next 4 to 7 games?
Well, I did write a World Series preview, which went out on Tuesday. And when I was advising people, like, sort of what is the best bet to make on the World Series, which is just another way of saying, like, what do I think is going to happen? I like the idea of betting on the Astros to win in 6 and to win in 7. Again, those are conflicting bets, but you win one and you're going to be in good shape. But the idea is that I think it's going to be a long series where ultimately the bad guys win, which is how life goes a lot of the time, unfortunately. They just have an edge across the board. You know, we talked about the Wheeler Nola 1-2, but if you look at Verlander and Framber Valdez, like arguably they were even more productive this year. And that's kind of the edge that Philly has. You could say they have a hotter lineup. That's a fair thing. But Houston's lineup is probably at least as talented. There's a pretty big bullpen disparity. These series in recent years, they have tended to go 6-7 games. We have not seen a lot of short World Series lately. My thinking, this is kind of an unscientific way to look at it. I imagine that Nola and Wheeler both go 500 and they lose the other game. So that would be Astros in 6, I'll call it that. That's a very simple way to look at it. It's more likely that, you know, one of them wins 2, the other loses 2, or something else like that happens. But that's just how I'm putting it together from the outset. So I'd say Astros in 6 is my off-the-cuff guess.
I think that makes a ton of sense. I think it makes the most sense to go even further, which, of course, is why I am picking Phillies in 7. It making sense has nothing to do with this anymore, where series after series, the Philadelphia Phillies thrive in the chaos. They are creatures of chaos. They are a team that you can just not make a mistake to. I know that also, it's not like, Houston's lineup, you can just sort of laissez-faire through it. Also very tough, but that Phillies lineup, you cannot make mistakes. You cannot lose your focus for a second. I think they just have those impact. As you mentioned, like, they have Kyle Schwarber hitting leadoff. That's bananas. That's a guy that most teams in the league would have hitting fourth or third. They have him hitting leadoff because they have the horses behind him. I like JT Realmuto in a series like this. I think he's probably the best catcher in baseball. I love the Harper dynamic. And I like, you know, you mentioned the Nola Wheeler allows you to, as much as you said, you know, Framber and Justin Verlander, others I may negate that. You know, in the modern game, sometimes those two starters is really all you need. If they win 3 of their 4 starts, then you only need one other win from somebody else, and that can be a knockdown, drag out. You get sick pitchers involved on both sides, and it goes to the 10th, and it just ends up being a war of attrition. And there's a special moment that somebody rises to the occasion. I think that has been the recipe for the Phillies. And you know, along with those big hitters, they also have the Gene Seguras, the guys who know how to make great contact and make things happen and run the bases. I think they've had that special magic sprinkled on them somewhere along the lines, and they sort of accepted who they are. And they are fun and unpredictable and chaotic. And I think that's going to play out. I think it's going to be, as you said, a long series, a dramatic series. I think we're going to have some crazy games, some late nights, some special moments, some games that both teams are very high and very low within the span of an hour and a half, sort of trading blows, trading big hits, trading big strikeouts. I'm really excited, if this is the way it goes, to watch the Philadelphia Phillies bullpen try to close out a World Series in a Game 7. Just the idea of it is hilarious. Like, there could not be a less safe bet on earth than, okay, we're going to turn it over to Brad Hand here in Game 7 to close this out. And that's so good. I'm really looking forward to it. Pins and needles. I'll take Phillies in 7. You take Houston in 6. For the exact opposite of reasons. That is very exciting. There is something else to talk about, and it's MVP futures, a great place, also the best place to get your lines for who will be the World Series MVP is North Star Bets. Nick mentioned on Tuesday his World Series preview went up. You can find all of the futures and the markets on every single game over there at northstarbets.ca. We're going to take a look at our favorite picks for World Series MVP right now on the Run Line. All right, Nick, your analytical mind mixed with sort of your prognosticative powers, we're going to take a look at some lines available on northstarbets.ca for who the World Series MVP is. Again, we will caution, this could be anybody. It could be Gene Segura. It could be Brad Hand. It could be Kyle Tucker. You name it. It could be anybody in any one of these lineups. There is no real way to know. The World Series is famously where anybody can step up and be the hero. That being said, Nick, who do you have your sights zeroed in on as the potential hero of the Fall Classic?
I don't think it can be Brad Hand. I'm just going to put that out there. If anyone's thinking of betting on Brad Hand, please, I'm advising you not to do that. When you're making this bet, you really are betting on a team, right? So we just gave our predictions. So my bet is going to be Astro-centric. I think the Astros, unfortunately, going to come away with this. And a guy I like on that team is Justin Verlander, plus 1,000. The thing I like about Verlander is that he is kind of a media darling in the context of these Astros, who are generally unlikable. He's someone who has this Hall of Fame resume that people are probably inclined to pad. He's just come back from injury at such an old age, been incredibly effective. Some of the other guys on the team, if it's close, like the Altuves and the Bregmans, are associated a little bit still with that 2017 sign stealing. He's someone people feel good about voting for, which is a big part of this, as much as it potentially shouldn't be. And he'll have to get a couple starts in to do it, so it'll have to be a longer series. But I think that it probably will be. He'll get two starts in, and if he, I don't know, puts up 13, 14 innings, and they're strong innings, strikes out more than a hitter per frame, then he's really in the mix for this. And plus 1,000 is pretty good for a guy who's high up on the team that you would have to expect to win whatever your heart tells you.
Yes, and the World Series also, you see the Bumgarner thing where he has two great starts and then they need him for, I don't know, relief in Game 7, or he has to come in and pitch and get some serious outs. I think that is a nice pick, an interesting pick. And I do like the media part of it. After all, we talked about this with Rookie of the Year and with our MVP voting and the Cy Young voting. It is a media award after all, so you do have to factor that in, I think, a little bit in your picks. And that being said, I have my sights on the favorite overall. It's Bryce Harper at plus 650. Talk a little bit in the likely hero section about why I like Bryce Harper in this series. I think if you're talking about the Phillies winning, Bryce Harper is really important to their success. You've seen it throughout the playoffs. He's been the guy driving the bus. He's been the guy hitting the big home runs. He's been the guy having the big at-bats. I think if the Phillies are going to win, Bryce Harper is going to be a huge piece of it. And it just makes a lot of sense to me. I like Bryce Harper at plus 650. Again, as you mentioned, if it's between him and somebody else, the media bent, it makes sense to tilt it towards Bryce Harper. I think the story is perfect. The prince that we were promised, finally reaching the summit, finally reaching the mountaintop, finally becoming World Series MVP. Another thing to add to his resume. If you're looking for a dart throw a little bit further down the list, why not Rhys Hoskins at plus 1,800? He's hit a bunch of home runs. He had a two-home-run game earlier in this playoffs. As a guy that reaps the benefits of how good this lineup can be, of how that many guys ahead of him can get on base, I think he's a guy that has potential to sort of come up, and maybe it's only three big swings, but they end up being the biggest swings of the series. If you're looking for a long shot, I like Rhys Hoskins at plus 1,800. All that being said, there's no real way to know. That's the beauty of the World Series. It gets started on Friday. Very exciting. I cannot wait. We've waited all season to get here. Nick, any parting shots before we say goodbye and get ready for the World Series?
I'll give you a parting bet, because my parting shot last time was a quasi-endorsement of arson. I don't want to go there again. I like Zach Wheeler at plus 2,000. If the Phillies are going to be the winners, he's a guy who could do the same thing Verlander does, but on the other side. Only 13 base runners allowed in 25.1 playoff innings thus far. He's been their dude, and if he wins two games for them, relief outing, like you said, he is absolutely in play.
Great pick. I love the pitcher. I love the pitcher lines. We've seen it. They become more and more important as the nature of the game changes. I think that's something that there's a lot of good options on that. And that being said, that brings it to a close for us. If you have a World Series MVP pick, or you want to make a wager on any game, any part of any game, player props, the spread, the lines, the over-unders, whatever you like to bet on, North Star Bets has you covered. You get Nick's insights, his World Series preview went up on Tuesday. NorthStarBets.ca for Nick Ashburn. I am Andrew Zuber from The Parlay. Thanking you so much for joining us this week on Pitch Talks. Leave us a review, subscribe, rate, thumbs up, 5 stars, review, whatever it is that your podcast catcher does, do that for us. We really appreciate it. We will talk to you next time when we're reviewing the World Series championship, probably right here on the Pitch Talks podcast.
Pitch Talks, brought to you by North Star Bets. That's a win.